good morning. Welcome to Pep Talk News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, and 850-437-1620 if you'd like to be part of the show today. I'm your host, PJ. In the studio with me right now is Mike Wiggins, and the garden line is open, sir.
Good morning, sir.
How you doing?
Doing just great. Who's that sitting next to you over there?
Meg Peltier.
Meg is in the house.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm loving this weather.
Oh, it is just unbelievably beautiful. It really is. But there is one word that kind of is coupled with this weather that is not beautiful.
Drought.
It's the drought.
I think you practiced that.
Well, we really didn't. It's just, you know, maybe we think alike. I don't know. But yes, it is so dry. It's so dry. And I think we even mentioned last week there are some that will, this time of year, turn off the sprinkler system, you know, put up the lawnmower and say, okay, you know, it's fall and we're not going to have to mess with this anymore. But you don't want to do that because all of that money and all of that time and investment that we have put in to our landscaping and our lawns and our vegetables and perennials and annuals and what have you can just be gone if we just don't take care of watering this time of year. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of people will ask us, well, how much should I water? And I always say, okay, on average, depending on where you live, 3 times a week, 30 minutes each zone, 3 times a week. Now, if you live in Gulf Breeze, which obviously is nothing but sand, you may go on a little bit more. If you live up near Milton, where there's a little more clay in the soil, you might go 2 times a week. Mm. But you have to determine that depending on where you live, what kind of grass you have and all of that. And keep in mind, it's kind of a trite expression, but your lawn can kind of tell you if it needs water. And we've mentioned these before, whereas if you walk on your lawn and you look back and you can see where the lawn packed down where you had your footprints, that means it's too dry.
Or if you have brown patches?
If you have brown patches, that's different. Yeah, that's different. Because if your lawn, St. Augustine grass has a spine, if you will, on the blade of grass, and if that blade of grass folds up, that means it's too dry. Mm. Now, the brown spots, you're right. If it gets really dry and your lawn is turning brown, then you really need to react very, very quickly. But believe it or not, BJ, this time of year, we can always get the old favorite brown patch fungus, which also, of course, will give you brown spots. Or even though it's a little bit late with this warmer weather, chinch bugs are a problem too. Mm-hmm. So brown spots again, especially out by the street and by driveways and that type of thing, because that's where the turf is warmer and that's where your tropical insects can be a real problem.
How do you tell the difference?
Good question. We're going to have a seminar on this morning. This is great. Yeah. Okay, here's the deal. If you have a brown spot, and along the outer edge, the circumference of the spot is kind of a burnt brown, and you kind of separate it out and it's kind of wet and greasy in the edges there, that generally is called Rhizoctonia brown patch fungus. And it's a tough one. St. Augustine gets it. Now, centipede really doesn't get it. Zoysia doesn't get it very much. It can, but it's St. Augustine where you have your problems with that. And that's why so many people have said, Uncle, I'm done with this. I'm going with Zoysia grass. And because it doesn't have quite the problems that St. Augustine has. On how can you tell the difference between sod webworms, I mean fungus, and chinch bugs, for example? Chinch bugs are just a brown spot yellowing. They get bigger and bigger. And as I say, they're out near the warmer areas in your yard by the streets and the driveways. Then, of course, you've got sod webworms, which easy to diagnose. You look at the patch in your yard, and it looks like a goat has fed on your lawn, and it's got a bunch of notches in the grass. It's so easy to tell. Back when we were in the business trying to analyze this for customers, we you could tell a sod webworm damage from about, 50 feet. So in any event, because it just has that look of, you know, something's been chewing on the grass. So, yeah, there are different things to deal with. I don't think those are problems with this cooler weather that we're going to have to deal with very much. I think the main problem is the drought and getting that water on that lawn. I've got by my front door some mums. I put four mums in clay pots out by my front door. And I'll tell you, I'm having to water them every day. Every day. Because the leaves just shrivel up. And you go over a week or so, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, drought is the word of the day. I've got another word of the day in just a minute, but we can hit the text.
Yeah, we do
line.
Have a couple of questions for you on the text line, 850-437-1620. And Meg is going to read the first question.
All right.
Okay, this is a little bit different topic, but it is, will neem oil, let me see here, neem oil keep swallowtail caterpillars off my citrus trees?
Probably so. Neem oil is a organic insecticide, if you will. It comes from, I think I've got this right, the neem tree, if I'm not mistaken. But yes, that should work, absolutely. Almost anything will work. There's another product that's good too, and that's called BT, two letters, BT, which is short for Bacillus thuringiensis, which has been around a long time, which is, once again, is only for worms, and it's very safe. Just like the neem oil is kind of organic, so is the Bacillus thuringiensis. Either one should work. They shouldn't be too much trouble. A lot of people, of course, don't want to spray anything on citrus, mainly because you're going to eat it, so they don't like to do that. So anything you use, check the label. Be sure the label on even the neem oil or even the BT, if it says can be used on vegetables, citrus, and that type of thing. If it doesn't say it, don't use it, because that label tells us everything we need to know with all the precautions. So those are two products. I think you're in good shape on the neem, but I really would be sure the label of the neem that you're using is for edible crops, if you will.
Okay. Yeah. And I got another question for you.
Sure.
Is now a good time to trim back azaleas?
Yes and no. Yes and no. Well, what does a lot of the lawyers say? It depends.
Oh, there you go.
It just depends.
Safe answer.
A deep pruning of azaleas right now is absolutely the wrong thing to do. Because remember now, those azaleas set their buds back in the summer, back in July and August. So you've got buds on there ready to bloom in spring 2025. Now, azaleas are going to send up what I'm going to call them, this may not be horticulturally correct, water shoots. Little shoots that come up. Now, those too could have buds on them because they've been set, but you don't want your azaleas to look unkept, if you will. You want it to look nice, especially with the holidays coming. So a light haircut is not a bad thing to do. It won't damage the plant. It just might reduce a few blooms that you'll have next spring. And if you don't do a deep pruning, I don't think you'll miss it. But just kind of clean them up. That's okay. But if you're going to, say, cut back a third because you're trying to reduce the size of your azaleas, I would certainly wait till after next spring, after the blooming season in March, April, and then do my heavy, heavy azalea pruning.
We'll be back with Pep Talk right after this. Welcome back to Pep Talk News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, 850-437-1620 if you'd like to be part of the show. Mike Wiggins is in studio and the garden line is open. Please text us your questions if you have any. And we do have a follow-up question with the last thing that Mike was talking about.
The neem oil.
Yes, so Paul from Sky Landscaping said to be careful with the neem oil. It could cook the plant this time of year with a drought.
I am so glad Paul said that because there are other sprays that we use on citrus and camellias and azaleas and boxwood and that type of thing, and that's called ultra-fine oil. Now, for those of us who are my age, I'm not sure how to word that, Mick, but those of us that are my age, remember we used to always spray with Volk oil on every spring, every fall. You just did it to protect those plants from scale and other insects. Ultra-fine oil was the successor to Volk Oil, which had a wider range of temperature restrictions. And that's important because even with ultra-fine oil, if you're going to get up to 85 to 90 degrees, don't use it. And I would imagine on that neem oil, it has on the label the temperature restrictions also, because you get that oil on a plant and you get these higher temperatures. We used to, you know, here we are in October, almost to November. This is the time to do it. But in Pensacola, we've just got to react to these weather features like this drought and these higher temperatures. So some of the things that we would normally do right now, we may just need to cool it just a little bit and just wait until we do get a little rain and we get some cooler temperatures. And if you're keeping it watered, the rain is not that critical. With the oil, it's the temperature that we're dealing with. So check that label once again on those temperature restrictions. I think that's very, very important. And okay. And Meg, I was going to say, you had Paul on the line there. And if you could text him back or ask Paul to explain to us the new landscaping license that I understand he is has obtained, if you will, which is really, really important insofar as landscaping in Pensacola, to have those licenses and that training. Paul at Blue Sky has always been so good, doing some of the best landscapes in town. But that license is going to make it even better. I'd like for him to maybe react to that. If we could, that would be great.
And back to the weather again, we did have someone that texted in, I live in Gulf Breeze, and so how often should I be watering my grass? And I have the zoysia grass.
Okay, that's good. I think if you've got zoysia, I think if you go 3 times a week for 30 minutes, I think you'll be okay. I really do. Keep in mind that zoysia, if zoysia starts looking like it's going dormant, and we haven't had any rain or you haven't watered it, that's one of the symptoms of the drought is zoysia, is it looks like it'll kind of morph into going dormant. So don't let that happen. Just water at least 3 times a week. And if you see the grass looking like it's going to need some more, it wouldn't hurt to go 4 times. It really wouldn't until we start getting some rain, because Gulf Breeze, obviously, the soil there is no soil. It's sand.
Right.
So, you have to react to that. That's a great question.
Okay.
It really is.
Well, I have a call from another person in Gulf Breeze with a little different situation. She says, hi, my name is Denise. I live in Gulf Breeze proper, and my front yard has been attacked by torpedo grass. Help. She says, none of my neighbors have it, and it's the only thing in my front yard. Is there anything I can do besides trying to pull it up to get rid of it?
Well, let's put it this way.
<Uh-oh>.
Let's put it this way. That is one of the most difficult weeds to control. It really is. Torpedo grass, you start digging it up, and underneath the ground, Meg, it looks like a bowl of spaghetti. It's got these white roots that just take over. It's so hard to kill. I don't believe you're going to find, in my opinion, maybe somebody knows, maybe Paul with some of his new training could react to this too, there's any spray, what I call a selective spray, where you could spray it on your centipede or St. Augustine or zoysia grass, and it would kill the torpedo grass and not kill the good grass. So where does that leave you? If you've got to kill the torpedo grass, you might have to use a non-selective spray like Roundup. Oh, that's a spray that a lot of people have used. Matter of fact, Roundup, for those who haven't heard us talk about that, a lot of people, rightly so, quit using Roundup because there were a lot of lawsuits and that type of thing. Well, it has a new formula in there now that you may want to look at to be sure it's right for you. But I always tell people, once again, read that label on something like Roundup to be sure it's something you want to use. I mean, you know, if you've got dogs and kids and pets and all of that, some of these things you may want to think twice about. But point is, you might take care of some of that torpedo grass with that non-selective, but be advised, it's going to kill all the grass, and you're going to have to replace all the grass where you have sprayed. So it's tough. It's tough to do. All you can do culturally is do everything else right. The right fertilizer, the right water, the right insecticides, the right fungicides. Do all of that right. Get that grass as thick as you can be, and sometime that'll help choke out some of these weeds that are so hard to control. But that's tough. I mean, you look at dollar weed. Dollar weed is, Gulf Breeze is the worldwide capital of dollar weed.
No.
Mick, if you and I could feed the third world
the
dollar weed and Gulf Breeze, we'd be so rich.
No.
Point is, in some locations, like Gulf Breeze, you're going to have some problems, maybe a little bit worse than other people. Even though it's right across the bridge from Pensacola, there are some weed problems that are tough to treat, the dollar weed and the torpedo grass. So good luck with that torpedo grass. If you're going to use some of those chemicals, once again, be so careful. Read the details on the label and just be sure it's for you.
Okay, so we still have a couple more questions, so you're very popular this morning.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, let me tell you what, Mick, let me stop, because this is kind of the first time you and I have ever done this. I can't tell you how much I appreciate these phone calls and texts we get from people. We have got the greatest garden line audience anywhere. And if you'll notice, the questions that have been asked already today are really great, timely questions. And I can't tell the audience how much I appreciate that.
Absolutely. We'll get back to those questions right after this on Pep Talk. Good morning. Welcome back to Pep Talk, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. 850-437-1620 if you have any questions. Mike Wiggins is here, and the garden line is open. We have about a minute left, so what would you like to talk about before we get to the news segment?
Well, I just want to say one thing. We had the one word of the day was
drought.
But there's another word of the day that's more important. Vote.
Vote, yes.
A week from today, we vote in this most important election. And maybe the third word of the day, if you're going to go vote in person next week, is patience. There are going to be some long lines, but this is so important. Everybody to get out and cast their vote, because you're going to be voting for people nationally, statewide, local, that are all going to be involved in making all the rules and regulations that we have to live by. So it's very important to vote for the person you think best qualified. So go vote. Second word of the day. What do you think, Meg?
Good morning. Welcome back to Pep Talk, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, 850-437-1620. I'm your host, PJ. Meg Peltier's here as well. And this guy, Mike Wiggins, the garden line is open. We also have some wonderful questions on the text line today. Again, 850-437-1620 if you have any questions.
All right. Another question for you. This is kind of a twofold question for you, Mike. I have grass on our right near our porch, and we play a lot in that area. And because of that, the centipede is pretty much deteriorated in the high traffic area, so it's now very bare. What do you recommend I do? And then the second question, so I'm going to load you up. Second question, I have planted Japanese sky pencil holly and Leland cypress on my fence line. I watered them in with Miracle-Gro, threw a soaker hose down and mulched over it. I soak them daily for 10 to 20 minutes. Am I on the right track? Should I put fence around the holly? Are they going to survive? So two questions for you there.
Let's do the first one first. Okay. The centipede grass. Our basic grasses are St. Augustine, centipede, and zoysia. Those are our three basic grasses. Yeah, you've got Bermuda and Bahia, but we won't talk about those. Centipede is a native grass. Centipede likes acid soil, which we have in Pensacola. That's why we have beautiful azaleas and camellias, because we have acid soil. But there is one drawback to centipede grass. I'm going to mention two. There's more than that, but I'm going to mention two. One is centipede decline. If you put in a centipede lawn in about 7, 8, 9 years, as that grass comes out of dormancy, you're going to have these big spots. It's just happens. It's just called centipede decline. You generally don't have that with Zoysia and St. Augustine. But what the person on the text line has is the other basic problem with centipede. It does not like traffic as much as St. Augustine and Zoysia. And the worst time for traffic is when it's dormant. In other words, in the winter months. In other words, if the kids are out playing soccer in January, just in Pensacola, we can do that, of course. You might have some problems with that grass coming back. A lot of the experts will say, one, either put another grass in there. Zoysia is a good one because Zoysia is even used on golf courses. So that's a good one. Zoysia is a good one. St. Augustine is good. But sometime you need to landscape your way out of it. A nice rock pathway, if you will. A native area, with pine straw and maybe a few plants, that type of thing. But be advised that traffic and centipede don't go together. And especially if you've got a lot of traffic on it in the dormant months when the grass is dormant. So that's just the way it is with centipede. Centipede's a great grass. It doesn't take that much maintenance. Matter of fact, I was reading the other day, there's one guy who's an expert. He's the guru in our business. Says he's got a lot of his clients that never fertilize centipede grass. I do not agree with that at all. But like for St. Zoysia and St. Augustine, we've given it a nice summer kick, a lot of nitrogen in the summer. You can just do without that with centipede if you want to. You can put some iron on it, but you don't have to do that. So centipede is a, quote, low-maintenance grass, but it does have that traffic problem.
Okay. Well, there was also the question about
Yeah, about Meg. Read what she has done.
Okay.
Insofar.
So they have planted Japanese sky pencil holly and Leland cypress on a fence line. And she says, I've watered them with Miracle-Gro. I have a soaker hose down and mulched over it. I've soaked them daily for 10 to 20 minutes. Am I on the right track? Should I be putting fence around the holly? Are they going to survive?
Well, I'm going to answer the last question first. If you keep that up, yes, you're doing a great job doing absolutely the right thing. The only thing I would question, if they're newly planted, using that Miracle-Gro this is a stretch, could not be the right thing to do with a newly planted plant. Maybe later after it gets established. But the soaker hose, the mulch, the watering every day in this drought for 20 to 30 minutes on a shrubbery like that is absolutely the right strategy. So, yes, I think they're going to thrive and be just fine.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, got another question. Can I plant shrubs now or should I wait until spring?
You know what, Meg? I was looking at some things that you and I want to talk about maybe in the future, and one of them is it's a true-false test on gardening.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, I got you lined up for this one. And the very first true-false question was, is spring the only time we should plant? Well, we know the answer to that in Pensacola. All our listeners do. That is absolutely, totally false, because fall is really a great time to plant, especially if you're going to do some landscaping. If you're going to plant some azaleas or camellias or ground covers or even annuals and perennials, the cooler weather is better because those plants just don't go through that shock of that hot weather. You can plant, let's say an azalea, let's use that, in July when it's 95 degrees. But you've really got to score those roots and you've really got water every day. You don't have to be quite as careful in the fall because of the cooler weather. So, no, I think you can plant those plants right now. It's a great time.
Well, they'll sure look pretty at Christmas time, right?
Isn't that the truth? Absolutely.
And that's reds and pinks.
Exactly. And that's what a lot of people are doing with the mums and with the pansies and the other annuals and perennials, daylilies, that type of thing, is get the house looking good for Christmas, for all the guests we're going to have. That goes back to pruning the azaleas. You want it to look neat and pruned and landscaped. So if you lose a few blossoms on your azaleas, don't worry about that.
Okay.
My opinion.
All right.
In my opinion.
I think we've got time for one more here. I live in Pensacola, and I'm trying to rid my yard of dollar weed. Is there a preferred poison that doesn't kill everything else, including fruit, vegetables, and flowering plants?
No. Anything that I recommend for dollar weed, and I assume it's in turf, in a lawn, should not be used anywhere near landscaping plants, vegetables, perennials, any of that. Two chemicals that I like, and this is for St. Augustine, Zoysia, and centipede, is Trimec and Carfenazone. Those are two what we call selective weed killers, broadleaf weed killers. A dollar weed is a broadleaf. Obviously, it looks like a silver dollar. And you want to get that chemical on that plant, on that dollar weed, and then it translocates down to the roots, and it kills the weed. Do not use it on anything in your flower beds or your vegetable gardens and all of that. But I'm going to go back, and I know I'm sounding like a broken record here. Read that label, because putting weed killer on your lawn, well, it's not like playing poker to double up to catch up. You need to go use exactly the formula that is on the label. If it's a tablespoonful per gallon, use that. Then do the arithmetic to see how much square footage that could cover.
Mike Wiggins is our guest. 850-437-1620 if you have any questions today. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Pep Talk, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, 850-437-1620. I'm your host, PJ. Meg Peltier is here, also Mike Wiggins, and the Garden Line is open. We love your questions, and I know you had a question that you wanted to expand upon, Mike.
I did, on the dollar weed, because that is something, it's a problem that so many of us have. Just a couple of final comments. Once, many of the remedies for this, like, what did I say, Trimec? Yeah. Trimec is a good one, but they're different strengths. Be sure to, once again, I got to quit saying this, read that label when it says, it may say on that label, good for dollar weed on centipede, do not use on St. Augustine, because it might yellow it out. So don't do that. Also, and Meg, we talk about this all the time too, it's called integrated pest management. If you've got dollar weed in your yard, you've got patches of it in your centipede or St. Augustine or so is your yard, you'd only want integrated pest management. Simply means only treat where the problem is. There's no sense spraying chemicals in areas of your yard where you don't have the problem. It's not going to keep them from coming up. So get a pump-up sprayer. I recommend that over a hose attachment sprayer where you can, if you've got dollar weed and you mix up that Trimec, you go right to it with that pump-up sprayer. Spray it on it and go. Obviously, do not water it in because you want it to sit on that weed and once again move into the root system. But that's just a couple of things. But integrated pest management goes for so many things that we deal with on the Garden Line here, where only treat the problem. No sense treating other parts of your yard.
Okay, we do have a phone call for you. Alan is on the line. Go ahead, Alan.
Hey, Mike, this is Alan.
How you doing, Alan?
Doing pretty good. Hey, I have an acre of land, and we've had it for almost 25 years now. And we've been losing grass over that past 25 years steadily. Now, we have oaks everywhere on this property. And when we've moved in, they were kind of small. And they're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the grass just gets less and less. What do I need to do? What's the problem?
Well, the problem sounds to me like shade. Simple as that. There is no grass that likes shade. A lot of folks look at St. Augustine and say, oh, that's a shade grass. I've read that in some pretty good literature. It's a shade grass. It is not a shade grass. Zoysia, centipede, St. Augustine like pure sun. Now, there's some places now, when I say that, you may go out and see a guy that's got a beautiful St. Augustine yard with a big oak tree right in the middle of it. Well, generally, that has happened because the oak tree was very small when he put in the lawn, and they kind of grew up together, and that grass kind of naturalized under that shade gradually. And it sounds like that might be part of what's going on in your yard. The only advice I can give you is to get a good tree surgeon out there to open up those trees, cut out as much as you can. You don't want to disfigure them to allow more sun on that grass. Now, if it's centipede, okay. If it's centipede you've got out there, if you remember our discussion earlier in the show where centipede kind of has a lifespan, it's not all going to die, but you're going to get bad spots in centipede after it's been in, less than a decade. Let's say 7, 8, 9 years. So that's going to happen. But if those oak trees are getting really big and a lot of shade, I tend to think that's why your grass is going downhill.
Huh. Well,
and the other thing, getting more sun.
I love oak trees.
I've got one too. I know exactly what you mean. If they just wouldn't drop all those leaves in the spring, I'd like them even better. But
that's
for sure. Oh, what a crazy year, wasn't it? I mean, with those leaves, never seen anything like it. But in any event, yeah. And sometimes you have to make a decision on, if I want to have these beautiful oak trees or if I want to grow some of these pure sun plants and my environment and my home or this acre you've got just doesn't fit, you have to make a decision. What do you want more, the oak tree or the grass? And you can always compensate for that grass, putting in natural areas, pine straw areas, plant a bunch of azaleas and ground covers and all kind of creative things you can do and still enjoy the oak trees. Mm-hmm. So that's just a little bit of what I would consider.
Okay, yeah, I think we have centipede. I'd have to get somebody to take a look at it to be sure, but you say centipede has a lifespan, so
much.
I love my oak trees, darn it.
well, I do too. About twice a year, I have a tree surgeon, and we have some great tree surgeons in Pensacola, I have to tell you that. And they come in there, and they've got the bucket truck and all that to prune my oak tree. And I always tell them now, I want you to prune my oak tree, but it's like getting a haircut. I want you to prune it, but I don't want it to look like it's been pruned. I don't want to look like I've got a haircut. So in any event, that's what I would consider.
All right. Thank you for the phone call, Alan. We'll be back with Pep Talk right after this. Welcome back to Pep Talk, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, 850-437-1620. Mike Wiggins is in the studio, and we have the garden line open. I know, Mike, you wanted to also talk about pecan trees.
We don't have enough time, really, to get into many of the details, but just a few things about pecan trees. It's kind of a staple. It really is. And as you know, DJ, we've talked about this on the show. We have a favorite clump of pecan trees in Pensacola. Every spring, we always ask the question, when is the last freeze? And many listeners to the Garden Line will remember this. There is a clump of pecan trees right off I-110, about, a half a mile or so north of downtown, on the right-hand side, on the east side. And we always tell the Garden Line listeners that every time you pass those trees in probably April, maybe May, and it's putting on new growth, because they've been dormant, we're not going to have another freeze.
Oh, nice tip.
I don't know if it always works, but it's always fun to look at them to see and kind of see if it really does work. Mm-hmm. But we can plant pecan trees here. You got to be very careful. They've got a long tap root. You've got to dig a hole only about 2 feet deep or 2 feet wide, but about 2.5 feet deep. And here's what you got to watch out for, and that's variety, because one of the varieties – or some of the varieties get what they call pecan scab. That's a disease that we can talk about, but you don't want that. So here's some varieties you may want to consider. Elliott and Sumner, they're good varieties, but they have a resistance to the scab. Stewart are great, but they take 10 years to produce. If you want to wait that long, it's a great pecan tree. Cape Fear is good. Desirable is good. But they have a high quality, but they have very low disease resistance. So if it were me, I would look for maybe an Elliott. That's a good one. But I think many of our listeners may remember this. This goes way back to a pecan tree called Pensacola Cluster. I wish we had more time. Maybe next week, Meg, we'll ask the question, if anybody has ever grown a pecan tree and was able to get a Pensacola cluster, it would be fun to know. Because back in the day, that was the one everybody asked for. Where's my Pensacola cluster? And even, golly, back in the 90s, we couldn't find them. I don't know if anybody even grows them anymore. But some of these other varieties will do well. You've got to have a lot of room. You don't want to crowd them too much. Well, they're going to get big, 70 feet or more. So we could talk more about pecan trees as we get into the fall, but that's the Cliff Notes version.
All right. Pecan trees. Thanks for being here today, Mike.
You bet.